AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Hey, look at that. Grains are sharply higher. Is it a signal the downside correction has run its course, or is it a setup for a major test later in the session? Only time will tell on that one. And speaking of tests, President Biden is ready to make more executive actions this afternoon. How is that testing across the aisle relations in D.C.?
Live from the forefront of a forecast winter blast via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with Senator Chuck Grassley, then it's on to Machinery Pete Greg Peterson. In the final segment, Monty Shaw from the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association, and right after the news, Michael Clark from BAM WX.
It's a dicey situation.
I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Yeah, that winter storm is barreling right through cattle country out there. Man, oh man, it's tough to escape a year without getting one of these storms that starts off with some heavy, wet snow, kind of creates a bad situation to begin with, and then you get the lighter snow with the heavy winds later in the day overnight. That's what we're set up for. And, boy, I know the cattlemen are hunkering down and getting ready and doing what they can, but, boy, oh, boy, watch out for this one. This one is significant.
Yeah. When you say barreling through cattle country, I can't help but think, so what you're saying is that all of the rodeo clowns must be sheltered in their barrels? Is that what you're referring to there?
Well,
the storm is so bad that they've taken shelter in the barrel?
I can see why you would take it that way. I get that.
Uh-huh.
I understand that.
Is that not the reality?
No, not really. No,
okay. You can think what you want to.
You do, so I will too. We have got a long list of things that I want to cover with Senator Grassley, the status of the COVID stimulus package, the impeachment hearings and trial, not hearings, trial, the executive orders, China. Wow. There's a long list. Hopefully we can get through it all. Let's get started so that we can leave some room for Michael here.
Well, Chip, speaking of China overtook the U.S. as the world's top destination for new foreign direct investment last year. New investments by overseas businesses into the U.S., which for decades held the number one spot, fell 49% in 2020. That's according to figures from the U.N. as the country struggled to curb the spread of the new coronavirus and the economic output slumped. China, long ranked number two, saw direct investments by foreign companies climb 4%. The 2020 investment numbers underline China's move toward the center of a global economy long dominated by the U.S., a shift accelerated during the pandemic as China has cemented its position as the world's factory floor and expanded its share of global trade, Chip.
Well, it's the only economy that posted positive GDP in 2020.
Right.
And this
right.
would be a big part of the reason for it, this foreign investment. And the foreign investment, you wonder how much those companies had to give up to get in. And I'm guessing it was a lot.
Well, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton urged a federal court on Friday to strike down the Biden administration's moratorium on deportations, slamming the action as a, quote, seismic change to this country's immigration laws merely by memorandum. The state argued that the Biden administration's moratorium, which shields some immigrants from deportation for the next 100 days, is unconstitutional and conflicts with a federal agreement to consult the state on immigration enforcement. The filing marks the second pending lawsuit challenging the Biden administration's immigration priorities. This is going to be a policy to watch, Chip.
Oh, absolutely. This one went from it's barely on the radar to very high up the priority list of issues that we're going to be dealing with the Biden administration.
Well, looking to reset the contentious U.S.-China relationship, Beijing is pressing for a meeting of its top diplomat with senior aides to President Biden to explore a summit between the two nations' leaders, according to the Wall Street Journal. Meanwhile, Biden has said he would meet first with allies to discuss issues, including how to jointly confront China. He's already spoken with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and reportedly will soon speak with Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and Biden struck different tones on the prospects of trade deals between their respective countries as Johnson became the first European leader to receive a phone call since Biden's inauguration. But meanwhile, Chip, sources indicate that Japan wants to be the first official visit to the White House under a Biden administration. How do you like that? Japan moving to the front of the line there.
Yeah, interesting. And it's common to think that it's good to have friends at the table when you're negotiating with China. And that's what it appears he's trying to set up here. Although I don't know how realistic it all is. We'll figure it out.
Well, and finally here, Dr. Anthony Fauci said recent data reported by the British government suggests a new, more virulent strain of the coronavirus is more deadly than the previous strain, but said U.S. officials needed to examine the numbers for themselves. Fauci said this weekend that if Johnson & Johnson's vaccine is authorized for emergency use, the U.S. could see a significant boost in available doses by May. And already the Biden administration has come under a certain amount of criticism for having some trouble getting the vaccine rolled out. And, you know, it's probably a manufacturing thing. It's a distribution thing. There's a lot of irons in that fire, Chip.
His latest comment was, listen, there's no way to change the trajectory of this, of the virus for the next few months.
Right.
Well,
right.
It's one of the things that he ran on.
That's the thing. I know it.
All right. Thanks, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark. He is with BAMWX.com. How are you, Michael? It's good to talk with you.
Doing good, Chip. We're busy this morning. We've got a big winter storm coming in.
Absolutely. Okay, let's talk about it. Where's the bullseye on this thing?
Yeah, so the bullseye is really going to be the southeastern third of Nebraska and western and central Iowa, from Des Moines to Hastings to Lincoln areas. That area there, really looking at the potential for a foot plus of snow. Maybe even more than that, Chip. Some of the model data is pretty aggressive, with some places even approaching over 20 inches in eastern Nebraska. So it's a doozy.
Talk to me about the winds that are coming with this, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, you're certainly going to have them. They're not going to be horrible, which is why I think we haven't seen any blizzard warnings fly. But we will have a northeast wind that will at times be 25 to 35 miles per hour. The strongest winds are going to be central Iowa over towards northern Illinois and the Chicagoland area. But I do think we will avoid that blizzard classification, at least for now. Okay. But it still will be a strong northeast wind into that storm. It's still going to be nasty either way. So,
yeah. And there's a high in the northern areas it's going to make for a pretty sharp cutoff on this storm, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, your northern three county rows of Iowa aren't going to see a drop of snow. Minneapolis, Sioux Falls, completely dry from this, a strong area of high pressure. So, yeah, you're laying down a swath from Nebraska all the way into Michigan, but just north of that, there's not going to be any snow at all. So, definitely just a classic winter storm, Chip, a classic snowstorm.
It's wet to the south and east of this of the snow, isn't it?
Absolutely. Heavy rains, too, from St. Louis to Evansville. All of Kentucky, over 2 inches of rain is forecasted. But, Chip, where we need some moisture in Indiana, Ohio, not much rain forecasted. So, something to keep in mind there.
All right. Well, we're going to keep an eye on this thing. Heads up out there in eastern Nebraska, western Iowa. It's a rough one coming. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Take care.
You bet. That is Michael Clark. He is with BAMWX.com. All right, coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa right here on AgriTalk. You know weeds can impact potential corn yields, but how do you measure it? I'm joined today by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, tell us a little bit about the relationship between weeds and yields.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chip. Essentially, immediately after you plant, your corn's yield potential is at its absolute highest. And then you start to get these environmental stressors immediately after you plant that reduce that yield potential. So higher yield potential really starts with early season weed control. because once the weed emerges, it steals vital nutrients and water, among other things that are needed for corn growth and grain fill.
Okay, so these weeds that emerge with the corn plant, how does it impact the health of the plant?
Well, early season weeds fundamentally alter corn growth, health, and eventually its potential yield. So weeds present at corn emergence are an immediate source of stress and cause corn to enact a series of defensive measures. These will include things like corn stalks growing taller and leaves growing wider, and that's to better compete for sunlight. The corn leaves grow parallel to the row versus out into the row to avoid competing directly for sunlight. All of these things are really irreversible, and they're going to have a negative impact on the yield overall.
Okay, so for corn growers that are looking to control those tough weeds, maximize yield potential, what herbicide do you recommend?
Only Acuron corn herbicide unlocks your full yield potential because it controls those tough weeds other products are missing. And when applied pre-emergent and at a full labeled use rate, replicated Syngenta and University trials show Acuron out-yields competitors by 5 to 15 bushels an acre.
Excellent, Steve. Thank you. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try the online calculator at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST. Learn how to boost your soil's performance and maximize ROI with Smart Nutrition MAP plus MST at smartnutritionmst.com. She complicated.
Left me. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis, it looks like you and the Senator's home farm are going to be right on the northern edge of the line of snow that's coming in this afternoon.
I wonder if the senator will put in a good word. If he has any pull with the weather, maybe?
Mother Nature?
I don't know.
Things further south? I don't know.
I'm not sure what kind of power that guy's got. Yeah.
That'd be asking a lot. Senator Chuck Grassley joins us right now from Iowa. Senator, welcome back to AgriTalk.
You know, I'll be with you anytime you want me. I enjoy talking about farming.
You bet. I know you do. I know you do. I want to talk about farming, but I'm going to get there a little bit backwards because I want to talk about the stimulus package, the COVID stimulus package. President Biden is looking for $1.9 trillion in spending. Should agriculture be looking for anything specific in that stimulus?
I would say not a whole lot, but I think that there are some parts of agriculture that probably missed out on the first two, you know, the first $24.5 billion, and then there was, I think, $10 billion in the most recent one we passed. There may be some segments of agriculture that missed out that needs to be taken care of, but not 100% of agriculture, if that's your question. So I'll leave it there unless you got a follow-up.
Well, you know, what's the status of the package? Is it going to make progress? Does it need to make progress?
I think there's going to be a package, but it'll be a lot less than $1.9 trillion. And I don't want to leave out the fact that there's still a lot of people hurting as a result of the pandemic. Yeah. But when you have $2,000 suggested going to families that make up to $350,000 a year, probably haven't been laid off or had any impact because of the pandemic. No, I think that what help we give needs to be given to those who really need it, who are directly hurt economically by the virus. That's for helping people that are hurt because of a downturn in the economy. And then there needs to be some help for our health care givers and maybe some more help for small business, although we don't have the last several hundred billion that went to small business expended yet.
Right, right. So I got to believe that some of the proposed funding to state and local governments has got to be a holdup on this as well, isn't it?
Yeah, there might be some compromise that can be reached in that area, but the extent to which, let's say, the state of Florida doesn't need any help. They have more people than New York, and New York has a lot higher taxes and spend a lot more money than Florida does. Doesn't it open up the fiscal irresponsibility of New York government compared to Florida, that has a lower rate of taxation and more people to serve? As just one example of questions that it's necessary that we take into consideration. But I do believe that there will be some help, maybe for some aspect of government help, but I think it's got to be directly related to the impact of the pandemic and fighting the pandemic. One other thing, though, that's in this package that's come from the White House is a $15 minimum wage. That's ridiculous.
Right, but it's in there.
And by the way, not only ridiculous, but it doesn't have anything to do with the pandemic. It's all separate issue.
Yeah, but isn't that one of the an example of some of the items that are in the stimulus package that they will pull out and they'll pass it late? I mean, the dynamics of Congress have changed, and Democrats are going to find different options in passing some of these issues that they want to pass, right?
Yeah, they will have to, but there's got to be some compromise. Even if they did away with the 60-vote requirement, which is the only thing in all of Congress that forces some bipartisanship. And most of my constituents want more bipartisanship. So that's the argument for keeping the 60-vote rule. But if they do away with that, even with a 50-50 Senate, there's going to have to be some compromise.
Right, right. Senator, I know that you are concerned that the Biden administration is going to use the pandemic as some cover to advance a progressive agenda. And President Biden is out there this morning or yesterday saying that there's no changing the trajectory of COVID for the next several months. Explain your concern.
Well, for instance, what he's got on his agenda, like doing away with the XL pipeline, doing away with fracking for energy. And don't forget, every person listening to your phone call that's involved in agriculure, there's great dependence upon energy. Why would you want to put people, 18,000 people out of jobs in Colorado, 33,000 people out of jobs in Wyoming, maybe 60,000 jobs in New Mexico, all connected with energy and all affected by the recent ruling that there's not going to be fracking on public lands or shutting down XL? Immediately the next day, companies laid off 1,000 people. So, and what's that have to do with fighting the pandemic when he tells us we got to do these things because the pandemic's going to be around for several months, and it's going to be until we get vaccinations going? He ought to be concentrating on the vaccinations and leave the energy industry alone. And he got elected on the strength of union votes. Why is he putting good union workers out of work?
Right, right. Okay. The Keystone XL and what it does to the competition for rail line in a grain-intensive area up in the Dakotas, that's another one that we've got to keep a really close eye on. China, Senator, China is testing President Biden. Has the response been appropriate?
Well, so far there hasn't been much of a response, but he does seem to think that he's going to keep the tariffs on as a tool to get China to negotiate. He's expressed disagreements with China on what's going on in Hong Kong with the Uyghur minority up in northwest China that are being put in concentration camps, things of that nature, which all sounds very good. But we'll have to wait and see how he actually deals with the issues that are coming up in the trade negotiations. And more importantly than even the trade negotiations, since national defense is the number one responsibility of the federal government, the extent to which China becomes every day more of a threat militarily to the world, particularly to that part of the world.
Gotcha. Okay. And, of course, we've got to talk impeachment. Is impeachment constitutionally legal? I know that the Democrats are arguing that it is.
Well, I'm going to give you two answers. One is how I would vote on impeachment. I'm a juror, so you don't state your opinion ahead of time. In fact, you shouldn't even have an opinion ahead of time. You need to listen to the testimony that comes in. So that's one answer to your question, that if you were going to ask me about impeachment, that's the answer I'd give you. You didn't ask that. You ask, is it going to move forward? It'll go forward. You ask, is it constitutional? I think that's a legitimate question based on the proposition that the Constitution is very clear on impeachment being for removing a president or other officers of the government from office. And it doesn't say anything about impeachment of citizens. And the president of the United States, former President Trump, is now citizen Trump.
Right.
So if he's done something wrong, the Constitution is very clear that even if he were impeached, they could still bring criminal charges against him. So let's shouldn't we forget impeachment, because maybe it's an unconstitutional use of impeachment, and instead whatever he should be charged with, charge him with it.
Right. I'm with you on that, Senator. If you can prove a case against former President Trump, prove it. Take it to the courts and prove it there. Sir, thank you so much for your time again. You know what? I'm going to give you 20 seconds. Give us something positive that's happening in D.C. right now.
Well, I think I'll give you a historical answer. A lot of people think that this is a crisis situation we're in right now. We've been bigger crises than this, and in 240 years, we've made it through, and I've got a great deal of confidence that the United States is going to continue to be a great and exceptional nation.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Bye.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, these grain markets are making a big effort at ending the downside correction that we've been going through for the last three, four sessions. What's behind this move to the upside?
Well, I think we just ran out of sellers, to be honest with you. We saw some follow-through selling, a kind of mixed trade overnight, but follow-through selling at the end of the session, and looked like we'd probably see more during daytime trade. We got to daytime trade and just wasn't there, and we started to move higher, and then things turned explosively to the upside. So, you know, we'll see. The finish is more important than where we're trading here mid-morning, but for now, it's broad based. You know, it's across the grain and soy markets, and soybeans and meal oil leading us to the upside.
Yeah, it's an impressive move, no doubt about it. 28, let's call it 27 to 30 cents higher in the old crop beans. We've got 8 to 9 cents higher in corn, and that wheat market is trading 6 to 7 cents higher in most contracts. Livestock trade mixed right now.
Yeah, the cattle market, live cattle, kind of took it on the chin initially this morning. The cattle on feed report last Friday had the placements above year ago, just fractionally above, but the anticipation was that they'd be down 3%. And that initially hit that market, but really there hasn't been a whole lot of follow-through selling from there. In fact, there was some buying on the weaker open, and we're trading kind of a mixed tone in both live cattle and feeder cattle right now. Mixed tone in lean hog futures as well. So kind of quiet and choppy action so far.
Boy, the meat market
stock trade.
Yeah, it feels like the meat market trade is going to be really important this week, setting the tone there. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer Plus Rewards, helping make every part of your season more rewarding.
Oh, great, man. We might get you to sing. And you think we don't pay attention to your social media posts, Greg?
This just made my year. That's awesome, guys. I love it.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis with us. And, of course, Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, who is a big Ronnie Millsap fan.
Oh, my gosh. Smoky Mountain Rain. Every time I posted on Twitter this week that I heard it on my Pandora station while I was working. It just makes, you know, when I hear Ronnie Millsap, it takes me back. I love Ronnie. And thank you for playing that clip. That is awesome.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. When I was an Iowa 4-H officer, what a difference you make in my life was the theme of the 4-H conference that year. Nice. So we both got a tie to Millsap.
I saw Ronnie in concert, I think, in Wilmer, Minnesota when I was a kid growing up. And just awesome tunes. I still love them.
I'll bet I saw him four or five times, Greg. A fun concert. Fun concert to go to and be at. No question. No question. Well, you know what? Before we get to the pick of the week, let's stay on social media here for a second, because you kind of blew it up by asking one simple question on social media last week. Talk about it.
Yeah, I think it was last Tuesday, Chip. I just threw out, I knew it would be like kind of opening the spigot, but just basically asked the audience, hey, what's your favorite tractor and why? And then if you got a picture of it, you know, share it. And it was just unbelievable. I think we had over 500 responses within a day across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And, I mean, I was just looking before we hopped on the air here, and it was really interesting, Chip. Before I hit the button to post it, in my head, I thought one word is going to come through on this. It's going to be grandpa. And that was kind of the main thing. Posts from good people like our Facebook follower, Matthew Stephen in Alden, Minnesota, posted a picture. He said, Pete, this is my family's 1969 John Deere 4020 power shift side console. My grandpa bought it brand new. Then my parents bought it. My parents have a picture of it being delivered brand new on the implement truck. So these tractors and connections we have, you know, and a lot of the responses were modern tractors. People just saying, hey, I love my, you know, whatever, my Magnum 290. Yeah. All the way back to the A's and B's and Farmall Super M's. And we'll have some fun stuff in the Farm Journal Field Days Equipment Edition, folks. So watch that next week. We're going to take some of these stories and make them into kind of a fun little piece. So thank you, everyone, for responding. It was really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was going to, and then I don't have a digital picture to include. And plus, I'd be torn because, you know, it's hard to pick. I mean, Dad started me out on an Oliver 77, and that doggone tractor was pretty hard to beat. But the 560, the Farmall 560, was awfully good tractor to me too.
Now, you'll be happy to hear then, Chip. You know, I approach this kind of from a data perspective too. So I was just kind of interested, what is the overall winner going to be? What tractor model had the most responses? And I will say that 560 is right up there.
Is it really?
Farm Journal Field Days, it is. Farm Journal Field Days, obviously 4020s are up there too. And I'm going to have a list. So stay tuned for that, folks. Big fun.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. You mentioned it. The Farm Journal Field Days Equipment Edition, February 9th. You can register for free, but you've got to register. But it's free. It doesn't cost very much, I don't think, Davis. Is it? I think it's free.
As I recall, there's no cost.
There's no charge.
Cost. In other words,
no
it's
cost.
Free.
That means it's free. Okay.
Yes.
So the Farm Journal Field Days Equipment Edition is February 9th. Just go there, farmjournalfielddays.com, to get registered for that. And you're going to be answering questions live when?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Tuesday the 9th, I think, right at noon, at lunchtime.
Good.
So come have your cheeseburger, your turkey sandwich, and we'll just talk the latest on the market, answer questions. Be big fun.
Fantastic.
Now, that turkey sandwich is some assembly required, as I understand, though. The event itself is free, right?
Actually, I don't have much skill in the kitchen, but I can't make a mean turkey sandwich.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Let's get to your pick of the week this week. What do you got?
Yeah, something different. We're going to Draperhead. My friend Dennis Belitsky with Resource Auction up in northeast North Dakota. They had an online farm auction. It was kind of a smaller sale, but super nice equipment. This was, I'm trying to remember, I think it was Thursday. And they had a 2019 John Deere 735 FD flex draper head with only 600 acres on it. And it did have a Crary air bar, which our friends at Crary, you know, they're all about excellence. That when they, those air bars, they had big value. And this thing sold for $85,750, which I got looking. That's, you know, you're drifting up into retail range there, even with that Crary air bar. So strong price there Thursday. And just a couple other highlights from the sale. They had a 2010 John Deere 94 34-wheel drive, just over 3,100 hours. That brought 157. And for perspective, last year the average auction price on a 94 30 was $122,816 with a high of 162. And that average last year was up 6.3%. So good condition used four-wheel drives, particularly like this, about 10 years old, have been going up in value. So, again, that brought 157. And then the combine, they had a 2010 John Deere 9770 STS, 3,453 engine hours. So, you know, not crazy low or anything. That brought 95 and a quarter. So, again, that was last Thursday up in northeast North Dakota.
Okay. All right. You went over to Wisconsin the end of the last week to kind of preview an auction, right?
Yeah, I did. Friday, we're presenting this on our Machine Repeat TV show, so stay tuned. It'll be coming up, folks. But the sale itself is tomorrow, Tuesday.
Okay.
It's in Evansville, Wisconsin. Our good friends at George Auction Service, Dean and Kale George, they're great folks, tipped me off to the sale, which is for George Andrew. And beautiful, beautiful equipment. You maybe saw the video I posted yesterday, interview with George, the owner. But a couple of the highlights, he's got a 2013 John Deere 9510R four-wheel drive, 1,958 hours, a 2011 John Deere 9230 four-wheel drive, 2,941 hours, three-point PTO, all new tires, pre-def, and all of George's stuff is one owner. And if you watch the video, he has just a crazy nice machinery shed. We walked around showing this equipment. He's got a planter chip, a 2019 John Deere 1775 NT, 24-30 inch Maximerge 5, 2,350 acres, just loaded. He's got a 2012 John Deere S670 combine, 1,472 SEP hours. And George showed me a 15-page copy. He just spent $20,075.69 on the combine getting it ready for the sale.
Oh, good.
And I said, George, why did you do that? And he kind of smiled. And Chippy's like a lot of farmers. When they sell something, this has been theirs forever. They want to present it as nice as possible. And that's George Andrew. Just a very nice man. And it was really fun over there on Friday.
Interesting. Now, obviously, there's going to be an online component of that auction.
If you go to georgeauction.com, you can find the link to the online bidding through HiBid. So, again, it's an online auction, and it's like I say, it's all one-owner stuff, super nice. So,
that sounds like a good one.
To get the connection with the guy like George, just a great guy. I do feel bad for him. They're big Packer fans, so I think they're maybe smarting a little bit today. But hopefully the sale tomorrow will pick up George's spirits.
I hope it does. I hope it does, yeah. Other areas where we're seeing good online auction results, FSBO at machinerypete.com. Really good stuff there, Greg.
Yeah, for sale by owner, folks. You know, if you've got an item for sale, just go to our website, machinerypete.com, and click on Sell Mine, and you can list it. And I tell you, we've been seeing some stuff just fly off the shelves here. I did a post on a International 1566 last week, sold the same day. $15,000. The seller was in Ohio. Buyer was almost 400 miles away. We had a John Deere 8100 tractor from Indiana, two-wheel drive at $62K. That sold to a buyer, a guy I know up in Ontario, bought it in a day or two after we posted about it. Had a post this week, Chip, on a 1998 Case H 8950, 1,966 hours on it. Travis Kozlowski has this thing in Three Oaks, Michigan. You want to go check it out, folks? Go to machinerypete.com. It is beautiful. Well, and then last night I posted about a John Deere 7020 four-wheel drive in Ohio, $15,000 with a rebuilt engine that's pretty sweet. So a lot of fun stuff out there.
Well, and it sounds like if you're going to put something on there, you better be ready for the phone to start ringing.
Oh, that's our goal. I mean, we appreciate people listing items for sale with us. And what we're trying to do here is help sellers get away from some of the garbagey stuff that happens with some of the other sites. You know, nothing against good folks at Craigslist. They're awesome. But sometimes you get bombarded with a lot of calls wanting you to list your item on other sites. And we've designed a system around that, but still want to bring you the folks that want to buy what you're selling. So it's pretty fun.
Gotcha. What's in the podcast this week?
Podcast, well, it's going to be one of my all-time favorites. We took a different angle, and I talked to a farmer, David McCubbin, from Marshalltown, Iowa, whose auction was last month. So I wanted to get in David's head. He actually sent me an amazing note. When we talk about the emotions leading up to the sale, deciding to have the sale, the busyness of it, and then on the backside, what's it like in the days, weeks, month after the sale? So we'll be posting that podcast this week, folks. I think you'll really enjoy it, so give it a listen.
Well, and he's a pretty good storyteller, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a very good storyteller. And he has some beautiful equipment.
Yes, he did.
We'll talk about that too. So
beautiful. Greg, great stuff, man. Thank you so much.
Hey, you bet. Catch you next week, Chip.
You bet. That's Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. We got Monty Shaw from the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association next.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free Resource Stewardship Planning Guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Hey girl, what's your name? It's so loud in here, I can't hear a thing.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Great conversation there with Greg Peterson. Man, he's a busy guy right now. Lots going on.
A lot of irons in the fire. Yeah.
Yes, he does. Let's bring in Monty Shaw. Monty is the executive director of the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association. Monty, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on. Just getting ready for a blizzard.
Yeah. It's coming your way. Just a heads up. You probably already starting to see some of it?
Not in Des Moines yet. I know it's hit southwest Iowa, they've been saying, but not here yet, probably after lunch.
Yeah.
But if it's time for the Iowa Renewable Fuel Summit, then you know it's time for a blizzard. I guess that's we're going to miss seeing people face-to-face and all those interactions and the trade show and everything that's a part of a normal summit. But I guess this is one benefit of being virtual is people can sit at home in their pink fuzzy bunny slippers and still participate.
Tell us about it. When is it? How do we get involved in it?
Yeah, sure. So this is like our 15th, I think. It's crazy to think we've been doing that many. 15th Iowa Renewable Fuel Summit. It's something that's free. It's open to the public, you know, anywhere in the country, around the world. All you have to do is go to the summit website, which is Iowa Renewable Fuels, plural, fuelssummit.org, and you register. Once you register, you get an email that has the link to the live stream. And it's tomorrow, Tuesday, January 26th, and we're going to kick it off at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. And it'll wrap up, there'll be a lunch break, but then it'll wrap up at the afternoon session around about 3:15.
Okay. Lots to talk about, Monty. And near the top of the list has got to be the fact that Iowa ethanol production has gone back-to-back years with lower production, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in my third, I've got two decades of promoting biofuels behind me. And, you know, so I'm in my third decade of doing this, and we've never had that happen before. In fact, last year, 2019, was the first year that Iowa ethanol production ever went down since we started tracking it in, I don't know, 1980 or something. And there have been some flatlined years, more or less, but it always gone up. Last year, it went down just a little bit. But when you look at 2020, we had a triple whammy. You had COVID demand destruction, you had the exemptions from the RFS demand destruction, and we'd lost those export markets like China, but even then more recently Brazil, and we lost 500 million gallons of production in 2020 compared to the year before. So it was hard. It hurt.
Yeah, Yeah, it certainly did. It certainly did. And, you know, we lost all that production, and you would have thought that it would have really shown up in basis levels. But, boy, the plants that were still producing were an active part of the marketplace, and we're still very, very thankful for the producers that are still up and running out there.
Yeah, and, you know, production is not – it is back up. You know, we're not down at the depths like we were last summer, but we're certainly nowhere near our past production, you know, probably 85%, maybe 90% of that. And remember, that's even kind of a false goal, because we never produced at our top production rate. You know, about 3 or 4 years ago when China was saying, hey, we're gonna need 1 billion gallons of your ethanol, a lot of plants in Iowa around the country did expansion projects. And then BAMO, we got in that trade war, and that went away. Then Brazil went away. So, you know, when we talk about, well, we're producing at 85 or 90% lower than a year or two ago, remember, there's 1 billion or more, 2 billion gallons of capacity in this industry that's never even been used. So we have a long way to go. Now, obviously, China's taken out the corn, so our corn growers are still doing okay, even though we're not chewing up as much corn. But think of how much better it could be if we had that stable U.S. demand. Yeah. And then when the export opportunities come along, it's like icing on the cake.
Okay, so stable U.S. demand. If you had a chance, and I hope you do get a chance, sit down with the new EPA administrator, Michael Reagan has been nominated for that. What would that conversation sound like?
Well, there's probably two things. I mean, first of all, and this sounds trite, but it's so true, just enforce the law. Just enforce the law. The RFS is there. Follow the law. Implement the real numbers. Don't undermine it with the general waivers. Don't undermine it with SREs, the refinery exemptions. You know, don't find it some new and crazy backdoor way of undermining it. Just implement the law. That will do a lot to spur demand and push us toward, you know, to where we switch from E10 to E15 being the new normal. It'd be good for biodiesel. That would be number one. Now then, as they go forward, you know, I think we'd have two messages. And number one is, you know, let's face it. We all know the Biden administration is going to have a big focus on carbon. Doesn't matter whether you think they should or shouldn't, they will. And guess what? We have a great story to tell when it comes to carbon with biofuels. But there's a lot of people out there who have just decided they want to pursue a bumper sticker slogan called EV mandates. And so, you know, they've decided that's the technology that they should be pushing instead of setting the goals and letting the technologies compete. So what we're trying to say is, look, over the next decade, the only way you're going to have meaningful reductions in carbon from transportation is with more biofuels. You just can't produce EVs fast enough, no matter how much money you throw at them. So we've got to keep biofuels, even corn-based ethanol and soybean-based biodiesel, could actually over the next decade be very close to net carbon neutral if farmers are given credit for the new farm practices that we're doing. So we can be a very powerful part of that solution. And why would you want to cut us off and just put all of your eggs in an EV basket? The second thing, and this is maybe something that you haven't heard before, that's I'm not going to say IRFA is the only one pushing this. We're not by any stretch, but something we've been pushing for several years that we think Mr. Reagan will have maybe open ears to, as opposed to the last ones, is the reduction in tailpipe emissions and how that affects poor and minority communities as well.
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting approach to it. I want to talk to you more about that sometime, Monty. We'll get you back on so that we can do that. Hey, once again, tell us how to get involved in the summit.
Yep, the summit is tomorrow, Tuesday the 26th, starting at 8:30 a.m. Iowa time, and you just go to www.iowarenewablesfuelssummit.org. You can sign up there. It is free, and just, you know, we've got great panels on lots of different topics, and you can come and go as you want throughout the day.
Excellent. Thank you, Monty. We'll get you back on soon. Thank you, buddy.
All right, thank you. Bye.
All right. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Sam Hudson from Corn Belt Marketing. And tomorrow morning, we're talking carbon, measuring it, capturing it, and getting paid for it. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.